I'll be reading scripture this morning for you. First reading will be in Matthew chapter 25, verses 31 through 46, the sheep and the goats, where the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him. He will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came and visited me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did you see a stranger and invite him in? Or you needing clothes and clothe you? When did you see the sick or in prison and go to visit you?" The king will reply, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers or sisters of mine, you did for me." Then he will say to those on his left, "Depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me." They also will answer, "Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty, or a stranger, or needing clothes, or sick, or in prison, and did not help you?" He will reply, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did not do for one of these, you did not do for me." Then they will go away to eternal punishment, but the righteous to eternal life. The second reading for today comes from the book of James, chapter 2, verses 14 through 17. "What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or a sister without clothes or daily food, if one of them says to you, 'Go in peace, keep warm and well fed,' but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead."
It is good to be here with you this morning. We're in our second week of our series, Three Simple Rules. And generally, about every other year, I like to go back to these in a short sermon series. These are the three rules that govern the life of the United Methodist Church. They were given to us by our founder, John Wesley, and they are simple. Do no harm, do good, stay in love with God. And last week we talked about doing no harm and how Wesley, in his biblical study, determined that harm generally came from bitterness and anger. And the Apostle Paul talks about the root of bitterness and anger and how we need to pull that out of our garden, that as we want to be fruitful, the fruits of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, thankfulness, goodness, and self-control, that when we don't uproot these weeds out of our spiritual garden, what happens is we make the mistake of letting that bitterness and that anger come out in some strange and destructive ways. And so we need to start. It takes intention. It takes action to uproot bitterness and anger. Whether that's some kind of combination of prayer and study, worship, service, therapy, There's nothing wrong with therapy. I actually brought my therapist to worship a couple, maybe 2.5 years ago to talk about it. It's good to talk about things with people. Everybody needs a confessor. Small groups, they can be as small as 2 or 3. Small groups that get together where people are honest about what God is doing in their life and where they feel like they're falling short. All of these things are intentional action which seeks reflection so that we're able to make changes and move forward. And so that's where we started last week. This week we're talking about doing good. And once again, doing good takes intention. James, the brother of Jesus, lets us know that faith without works is dead. We can talk about our faith all that we want, but the reality is that love is a verb. It's not a noun. And so until we begin to actually engage in the work, the action of loving other people, it's just theoretical. But I think with Jesus, it's a little more complicated than that. In order to understand Jesus, you have to understand the concept of clean and unclean. And I'm by no means a biblical scholar. I didn't major in Old Testament scholarship or anything. But one of the major themes both in the Old Testament and then leading into the New Testament is this idea of clean and unclean. That there are clean and unclean foods. There are clean and unclean actions, and there are clean and unclean people. And if a person is clean, what that means is they're right in the eyes of God. And that's generally, those are people in the Old Testament, those are people who are the part of the nation of Israel, they're Israelites. And they're Israelites that are in right standing with God and with others. And when I mean right standing, I mean it across the board. I mean in terms of how they live their life in relationship to other people, in terms of their health, whether they're healthy or not. You could be unclean if you are unhealthy. You know, if you took up sick with something like, say, leprosy, you were considered unclean, and you had to stay apart from everybody else. I mean, it was this designation of who you could be in relationship with, who you could interact with, who you could do business with, who you could touch and who you could not touch. Clean and unclean. And the Old Testament law spends a lot of time defining what that looks like. And so when Jesus comes on the scene, there are these boundaries that exist. Those who are clean are Israelites. They are the children of Israel. And not even all of those people are necessarily clean. Some people are diseased, and so they're not clean. If you were a leper, for example, and you were walking down the street, it was your duty to call out, "Unclean, unclean," and then people would run over to the other side of the road so they would make sure they would not get your disease. So if you had a sickness like that, you were unclean. If you had committed some egregious sin that had not been repented of, you were unclean. If you had come into contact with anybody who was not an Israelite, there's a story where there's a story in the gospel where Jesus is approached by a Roman centurion about coming to heal a slave of his. And Jesus is willing to go, but the Roman centurion understands that if Jesus actually enters into his home, that will make him unclean because he's a Gentile, he's a pagan. He has this faith that Jesus can heal his servant, can heal his slave, but at the same time, he also realizes the risk that Jesus is taking culturally by entering into his home. And so the centurion says to Jesus, "You don't need to come with me. You don't need to come to my house. You just say the word, and I know that my servant will be made well, because in my life in the Army, I know that when a superior officer talks to an inferior officer and gives an order, it's just done. So you speak, Lord, and I know it'll be done. Jesus marvels. No one in Israel has this kind of faith. That's clean and unclean. The centurion understands Israelite culture at that particular time in history. And so there are just people you're not allowed to come into contact with. If you've ever read the book The Red Tent, which was popular years ago. Ladies, it's an interesting read about what kind of standing in terms of menstrual cycle, what kind of standing you had in the community and in your family. All these rules govern everything in terms of how you interact with people. And Jesus breaks down every boundary, just one at a time. Heals the Roman soldier's servant. He heals the child of a Phoenician woman. He lays hands on a leper. He lays hands on a person who's deaf. He lays hands on a person who's blind. He heals someone on the Sabbath, which is a day when you're not supposed to do anything. One by one, Jesus just keeps breaking through these boundaries that are supposed to exist. And that's what gets him in trouble. Paul, as he talks about the creation, he raises the question, is anything that God has made clean, that God has made, is it unclean? Can God make anything unclean? See, this is what Jesus raises up. So here's the deal. Jesus is always doing good, but he's always doing it in a way that makes other people uncomfortable. He's doing good with people who by all accounts, in terms of the wisdom of that time and of that age, he should have nothing to do with. I mean, some people are redeemable, but they haven't gone through the proper process. They haven't gone to the temple and gone through the rites of purification so that they can be reinstated. And Jesus lays his hands, he interacts with these people without any hesitation, without any kind of fear. If they indicate any kind of faith in him, he rewards that faith. But Jesus interacts with people who are not redeemable. And yet they are redeemed by him. See, we're not just called to do good with people who can do good back for us. That's called enlightened self-interest. That's one of the principles that Adam Smith cites as he lays out his understanding of capitalism in the book The Wealth of Nations. It's this idea that the reason why people will be good to one another is that they understand that at some point down the line, the person that they do good for, they may need them to do good for them going forward. It's kind of the golden rule, I guess. And Jesus takes this one step further. He says, do good for people who can't do anything good back for you. Just don't even think about that question. Don't think about reciprocity. If the right thing is in front of you, you need to do it, even if it makes you uncomfortable. And he pushes us in terms of the boundaries that we have around our own understanding of who's clean and who's not clean in our lives. We did a worship service this past Christmas. It was called a Blue Christmas. It was for people who get depressed or get down at Christmas time for whatever reason. And the band, I worked with Jeff and the band, and we served some food, and people came out, and the whole idea was that Christmas is it generally people are supposed to get happy at Christmas. They're supposed to be filled with joy. And there are just some people who, for a myriad of reasons, do not. So this was a service for them. It's a service you're supposed to do on the day of the winter solstice, when the night is the longest. We did it the day before because it was the winter solstice was a Friday, and it just didn't work out in our schedule. But it was still a pretty long night. And I would love to tell you I got the idea for this service, which went well, I thought. I would like to tell you that I came up with this idea myself, but I stole it, borrowed it, whatever you want to, you know, thou shalt not steal. I borrowed the idea. I mean, lots of different people have done Blue Christmas services, but my favorite is the one that Dave Harris, who's the now retired senior pastor at Trinity United Methodist in town. It was the service that he would do with his band, the Third Floor Band, which was a band made up of some family members and friends from the Lima and Findlay area. And it had formed years ago before he was at Trinity. Dave was a district superintendent in the old Findlay district. And the thing about being a pastor who's in charge of other United Methodist pastors, which is a supervisor, which is what the district superintendent is, you do preach a lot, but you never preach on Christmas Eve. You never have to. Nobody wants to give up their pulpit on Christmas Eve. Because Christmas Eve, that's one of the big worship days, right? Easter and Christmas. Those are the two. Unless you're at Shawnee United Methodist Church, and then it's Easter, Christmas, and Biker Sunday, right? And someone come up to me. I was at a solo and ensemble contest yesterday, and I had someone come up to me, and they said, so you got your sermon ready for Blessing of the Bikes? And I said, well, it'll be ready about 3 minutes before I get up there to speak. But he said, you know, for a lot of guys, that's their Easter. That's pretty cool, isn't it? But Christmas Eve, you know, people come out, a lot of people, the families are at home, and maybe people you haven't seen at worship in a while, maybe not since Easter, they come out and they fill the place up, and everybody's singing, and there's candles, and you pass the light one to the other, and it's just, if Santa's going to come, and little kids are excited, and it's just a lot of fun. Christmas Eve is a lot of fun. Nobody wants to give that up. So after Dave and his band had come up with this service, he told me that he got a request to do this service at a women's prison in Marysville on Christmas Eve. And they did that, and then the next year they were asked to go to a men's prison, maximum security, to do this service again on Christmas Eve. And he talked about how different it is Christmas Eve. You know, it's about family, right? It's about family, and it's about Jesus being born, and it's about presents, and it's about blessings and joy and all these things. And he said it's not quite like that in prison. It doesn't feel the same, but he said, I never felt the power of God more strongly than I did that night. And see, Jesus, he's pushing us in this scripture. Whenever you find someone naked and you clothe them, whenever you find someone hungry and you feed them, or thirsty, or you give them something to drink, whenever you go visit someone in prison, even if they make you feel uncomfortable, even if what they did upsets you, and you still go to visit that person in prison, when you do so, you visit me. Jesus wants to push the boundaries that you and I have set up in our lives in terms of who we have determined is clean and unclean. And I guarantee you, whatever boundary you set up, Jesus is going to challenge that boundary. Jesus just is. That is the lesson of church history. That's when we get into trouble. That's when we fight with one another. You are standing in a church that only built its own building because during the Civil War, when they used to rent the school building, Copperheads, which were people who lived in the Union, lived in Ohio, who supported the South, vandalized the school on a Saturday night before the Methodist preacher and his flock could use it on Sunday morning for worship. When they arrived there, they found the school just gutted. Among other things, somebody had captured, these Copperheads had captured skunks. And they had let them, they had agitated them. I don't know how you agitate a skunk. I don't want to know. But they had agitated these skunks and they turned them loose in the building. And by the next morning, the building was uninhabitable. And they said that day they raised $900 in gifts and pledges. Pastor Leroy Belt. And pledged that they were going to build their own building and they were going to stand fast on the gospel, which meant standing fast on abolition of slavery, which had already torn the denomination apart. See, at every instance in history, when we ask the question, should we love these people? I mean, the one thing that they say Jesus says that's different from the New Testament, from the Old, is love your neighbor. Because in the Old Testament, there ain't no love your neighbor. If your neighbor knocks out your tooth, you know what you're supposed to do in the Old Testament? Knock out their tooth. If a neighbor pokes out your eye, you know what you're supposed to do in the Old Testament? Poke out their eye. And the problem with eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth is that if you let it go on, everybody's blind and they're gumming their steak. And Jesus says, love your enemies. Do I really have to love my enemies, Jesus? Really? Jesus wants to push us out of our boundaries. He wants to challenge us to see how far we'll take love. Often it's just a little bit of work, but it takes a whole lot of love to love people that we haven't been accustomed to loving before. It puts us in strange circumstances. I've been seeing somebody, her name is Jamie. She bought me these pants. She paid like $2 for them because she's amazing. She said, I'd lost so much weight. She said I was starting to look like Matt Foley from Saturday Night Live, that old Chris Farley character. Because I was always adjusting my pants, you know. If you don't listen to this sermon, you're going to find yourself in a van down by the river. One of the first things she invited me to do with her after we'd been seeing each other for a while was her daughters decided to do this Christmas party where they would decorate Christmas cookies and they would make Christmas decorations. And she asked if I'd be willing to help. I was like 8 or 10 girls, middle school girls that were there. You know, I've got 4 kids. And I got Max, who's 21 today. And I got Xavier, and I got Elijah, and I got Toby. So I got 4 kids. I've helped put on a lot of different parties. It's pretty simple. You buy a pizza. You throw out a bunch of junk food. You put out some bananas and some apples or some tangerines to make yourself feel better that you left out a healthy option, which everybody ignores. The kids go down in the basement, play video games. They come up, you know, periodically to get something to eat and go to the bathroom. And, you know, they kind of keep to themselves. And then you just got to scream down there at like 1 o'clock and tell them it's time to go to sleep. And they say, okay. And then they ignore you and they stay up all night. Simple. I know how to do this. Never been to a party with little girls before. First thing we did when I arrived was cut up vegetables for the taco bar and cut open the avocados to make the fresh guacamole. And I thought to myself, what? And there's lettuce and there's tomatoes and there's all these healthy options and, you know, there's healthy drinks. There's not a Mountain Dew or a Dr. Pepper in sight. Most of the girls drink water. And then they show up and they talk. Like, all they do is talk. They talk. My kids come home from school and I say, how was your day at school? And I get, fine. What'd you learn today? Nothing. Do you have homework tonight? Yes. Are you going to get it done now? Yes. Then they ask one question. What's for dinner tonight? I answer that question, spaghetti or breakfast for dinner or whatever, and they say, fine, that's it. We might say a little bit more before the end of the night, but largely there's not a whole lot more than that most days. Those girls spend more words in 5 minutes than my boys do in a month. And the stuff they talk about, I don't want to talk about that. I accidentally overheard them while they were decorating cookies, which, amazingly enough, survived long enough to be decorated. That wouldn't happen in my house. Be like, cookie, blah, 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 blah. No cookies, no icing. I mean, they've got cookies. It's like Peppa Pig. One little girl, she like made a Peppa Pig, whoever that is, and put it on top of this cookie. They were exquisite. And I walked past and I heard them talking and I was like, no. And I ran into the kitchen and just got at the sink and started washing dishes and sang, swing low, sweet chariot, coming forward to carry me home. I'm not listening, sweet chariot. It's different. Takes you out of your comfort zone. You ever been taken out of your comfort zone? If you got to love outside of your comfort zone, if you got to serve somebody outside of your comfort zone, if you got to show grace to somebody out of your comfort zone, if you got to do good outside of your comfort zone, guess what? God's already there. And it's probably a necessary step that you're going to have to take as a disciple of Jesus Christ to become fully and completely the disciple who you are supposed to be. But oh, on the other side. I went and saw all the Oscar shorts. All the live action and animated Oscar shorts. It's like 3.5 hours long. With an intermission. I've never been to a movie with an intermission before. And there were a lot of good ones, but there was one that just blew me away. And I'm not going to stream it because of copyright issues, so if you're following on the stream, I'm about to shut you down, but you can go find on the internet the short film Hair Love. And when I saw it, I saw Jesus in it. Because often it's not the big things, like the big questions, like the big asks, like where we really feel like we're being stretched. Often it's in what seems like the small things, the small challenges, the short boundaries that we're willing to take on to show love in new and meaningful ways. Doing good often just takes a little bit of work. But it takes a whole lot of love. And so, I guess my challenge to you this week is, who is God calling you to love in a new way this week? Who has God been tugging at your heart? Do some good for, who might just be a little bit outside the boundary of what makes you comfortable. I want you to know that wherever that boundary is, Jesus is on, he's already there. And they killed him for it. Death did not defeat him. And so the power that raised him from the grave is waiting to raise you up. As you seek to do good in his name.